Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants, since 1985 offering discerning patients and dentists options for same-day replacement of missing and compromised teeth. Information online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. On today's episode of The Flickering Torch, Marty agrees to leave Olympic House forever.
I agree to leave Olympic House forever.
And then changes her mind, prompting Lloyd to say,
I'll leave if you will.
And Senator John McCain to exclaim,
Will you guys just knock it off?
Stay tuned for the gripping tale of power, pride, and persuasive perks on The Flickering Torch. But first, joining me now on the line from Colorado Springs is the Boston Globe's John Powers, who's been following this week's soap opera involving the United States Olympic Committee, including the aforementioned Marty and Lloyd, as well as Congress. John, welcome back to Only a Game.
Thanks, Bill. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you. On Tuesday, United States Olympic Committee President Marty McMeyer and CEO Lloyd Ward were questioned before members of the U.S. Senate, including the aforementioned Senator McCain. What was the outcome of those hearings?
Well, I think they were basically told, stop the food fight, keep your name out of the newspapers. Ben Nighthorse Campbell, who was the senator from Colorado and the Olympic judo captain in 1964, man, you don't want to mess with, said, I haven't read about an athlete in 2 months. So the feeling is, whatever you do, get this thing solved, but don't bring this Hatfields and McCoys mess back to Capitol Hill.
Was there a particular exchange between senators and USOC types that, characterized the meeting on Tuesday?
Well, I think one word that kept coming up was the D word, dysfunctional. And what was kind of interesting, at the very end, there was squabbling back and forth, even between the USOC people. And finally what happened was Senator Bro from Louisiana said, I hope you at the table don't ever have to work together again. It ain't going to be a pretty sight. And I think that is their immediate problem now, is there is an executive committee meeting in Chicago next week where they are likely to have a no-confidence vote in Marty McMeyer, the president, demand she step down again, and so we go on and on.
Apparently, one outcome of the hearings is that Capitol Hill does plan to rewrite the 1978 Amateur Sports Act, which would change the way the committee runs Olympics-related sports. Is this a development that's long overdue?
Yes, I think a lot of people said, first of all, how many amateurs are out there anymore anyway? There's a feeling this was a very good act in 1978, but it was time to have the thing updated anyway. Mostly what they have to do is decide what it wants to be. Is this going to be the big tent for everybody in America, you know, who, you know, ever threw a ball? Or is this going to be something that basically puts the U.S. Olympic team out there? And that is the thing mostly. They have to make it smaller, more responsive, and they have to decide who's running this thing. Is it the volunteers, the Mankemeyers of the world, or the Wards, the highly paid CEOs?
John, as you mentioned, the USOC's traveling circus will move to Chicago next week. A 22-member executive committee there will reportedly take a no-confidence vote on Mankemeyer, whom it claims has inflated ethics charges against CEO Lloyd Ward. Is Mankemeyer guilty of that charge?
Well, I think what she appears to be guilty of is leaking the fact that he was being investigated for conflict of interest. I think what the top officers felt, that she was trying to get a rush to judgment that would make Ward appear guilty. But I think what has been exasperating people following the games is that all the he said, she said is just spinning wheels. You've got the Olympics next year, and no one has talked to the athletes. I actually came out to Colorado Springs so I could talk to an athlete.
What exactly is the nature of the ethics charge against Lloyd Ward?
Well, Lloyd Ward last year admitted asking his staff to help his brother's energy management firm get a job with power generators for the Pan American Games this summer. And that was where the whole mess stemmed from, is that Marty Mankemeyer, who was the president, evidently leaked those charges against him. They ended up in the newspaper, and there was a feeling that he was being tried before having a hearing.
To what extent does Lloyd Ward's current membership at the Augusta National Golf Course fuel discord between him and President Mankemeyer?
I think that is very clear. When the issue first came up last year, she was heard to say, had I known this, I might not have voted to bring you in. One of the issues is though, although it is, you know, encouraging that an African-American like Lloyd Ward is in Atlanta, the feeling is he isn't doing enough to open the door for women. And here is, you know, an Olympic movement that is half women, and they're basically feeling is, you know, why won't you at least write a letter of protest saying, if you don't open it to women, I'm going to step down. So there's a feeling, is he the CEO for everybody or just for the men?
We've got a committee meeting in Chicago next week. We've got a USOC Board of Directors meeting in April. Is the result of all this an efficient, streamlined, harmonious USOC in time for the Athens Summer Games?
I think that's everyone's hope, is that even before April, this will all be figured out. That basically, if you can do two things, shrink that board from about 120 people to about 20, and shrink that executive committee from about 23 people to about 7 or 8, that starts it. And also let people know that the CEO runs it on a day-to-day basis. I think what this is all about is the age-old thing. Who runs this thing? Is it the volunteers or the paid staff? I remember Dave Gavitt, when he was with USA Basketball, said with some disgust, it's all about who gets to wear the tuxedo.
John Powers covers the Lords and Ladies of the Rings for the Boston Globe, and he is our Olympics guy here at Only a Game. Thank you, John.
Bill, thank you.
On Tuesday, WNBA President Val Ackerman divulged what she called the worst-kept secret in the state of Connecticut, that the league's newest team, formerly the Orlando Miracle, will henceforth be known as the Connecticut Suns, owned and operated by the Mohegan Sun Casino in Uncasville. While some observers have raised eyebrows at the WNBA's decision to sell the team to a casino, many Nutmeg State fans are just happy for the opportunity to take in even more top-notch basketball. Only a Game's Karen Given has our story.
Connecticut, loud and proud basketball fans.
With all the pageantry of a made-for-television event, the WNBA welcomed 400 fans into the Mohegan Sun Arena for the announcement. As fans lined up for all the free food they could eat, they were readied for the cameras with the obligatory lesson in how to cheer for their team.
Okay, let's try this section again. I count to three. One, two, three, Connecticut! Okay.
Connecticut women's basketball fans don't need much instruction. University of Connecticut home games at the 10,000-seat Gamble Pavilion and the 16,000-seat Hartford Civic Center are regularly sold out. Led by three former UConn players, the Hartford-based New England Blizzard enjoyed some of the ABL's biggest crowds until that league folded more than 4 years ago. With that history in mind, the WNBA filled the dais with former UConn players, only one of whom will call Connecticut her home.
Wait, I got to talk to Sue Bird.
I don't know.
Hey, Kara, how are you?
Fans lined up for autographs from former Huskies Kara Walters, Sue Bird, and Connecticut Sun Nikisha Sales. There are 11 former UConn players in the WNBA, and 18-year-old Christine can't wait to watch them play again.
Before then, you traveled up to New York or somewhere else to go see them play, and now you can just, now it's right down the road. Plus, I saw their last game, Sue Bird and the Fab Five, so it's going to be different. Seeing them all on different teams and everything is going to be crazy.
But while Christine's quick to support the new team, she's not so sure about the team's owners and arena.
I was a little edgy on that. I don't know why. You think WNBA, you don't think, hey, let's go gamble after the game. But I guess it's all right. It's two different things, so I guess it'll be fine. I mean, you got basketball and then gambling. I'm not even old enough to gamble, so it's cool for me.
Mohegan Sun's multiple entrances allow fans to approach the arena through an area more closely resembling an upscale shopping mall than a casino. But standing at the front doors of the arena, it's impossible to miss the clamor of the gambling floor less than 50 yards away. The WNBA is quick to point out that Mohegan Sun doesn't have a sports book and that the arena has hosted NBA exhibition games, Arena 2 football, and even the Ice Capades. But the WNBA's decision to sell a team to a casino comes just weeks after the mayor of Las Vegas threatened to sue the NFL for barring the city from running a television ad during the Super Bowl. And neither the NBA nor Major League Baseball allows television ads depicting gambling to run during its broadcasts. Some say the league, facing the possibility of three teams folding this year, was under pressure to find a home for the Orlando Miracle quickly. But league president Val Ackerman says even if the league had more time, Mohegan Sun still would have been the right choice.
I'm a mother. I have two daughters, 10 and 8, and I would have absolutely no qualms about it myself. You know, I think as a family destination, this place is top-notch. And all of the things that have made the WNBA special in terms of the importance of kids, the interaction between our players and our fans, the outreach, all of these things are going to happen and more.
Nearly an hour north of Mohegan Sun, in Storrs, Connecticut, more than 10,000 fans crowd into Gamble Pavilion to watch the Huskies take on Villanova. Pat says she won't hesitate to take her 11-year-old daughter, Nicole, to see games at Mohegan Sun. And she thinks UConn fans, currently enjoying a record-setting 58-game winning streak, will get used to losing every now and again.
I think the parity in women's basketball is much, much better than at the college, although college has really come a long way. But I think the professional teams are a lot more equal. So you don't have the runaway, you know, kind of teams and stuff, which makes it better, actually, to watch. I enjoy close games.
Many Connecticut fans express disappointment that only one regular season game will be played in the Hartford Civic Center. But at least one fan, dressed in a tall Dr. Seuss-type hat and UConn sweatshirt, looks with optimism at the deep pockets of the casino that reportedly paid $10 million for a team in a league that has never turned a profit.
We could never come up with the kind of cash the Mohegans have. Forget about it. And they'll make sure it's a success. They'll subsidize it, they'll do whatever it takes, and they're going to be the best for the WBA as well.
The Connecticut Suns will begin their season on May 24th against the two-time champions, LA Sparks. For Only a Game, I'm Karen Gibbon in Storrs, Connecticut.
It's 18 minutes past the hour.
When I was a kid, I liked to play with bricks.
In preparation for the National Hockey League's All-Star Weekend, the Lego Company constructed from 12,000 Lego bricks two replicas of the Stanley Cup. Unhappily, the replica slated for display in Miami was stolen from a sports trade show in Las Vegas. The Lego folks have offered a reward for the return of their ersatz trophy, but lacking confidence that it will be returned, they've also asked NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, to whom they presented the second replica, if they can borrow it for the All-Star Weekend. Undeterred, apparently, by rumors that Mr. Bettman has sold the Lego Stanley Cup to try to keep various NHL franchises solvent.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. In the news this morning, U.S. spy satellites show new evidence of North Korean nuclear activity, prompting U.S. military commanders to call for more warships, planes, and troops in the area. To read more, log on to our website, wbur.org, and click on News. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Mount Auburn Club, Health Racket Club and Spa, celebrating more than 28 years of fitness education, support, and results. Mount Auburn Club, full of life, mountauburnclub.com. And by Jordan's Furniture, furnishing houses and creating homes and families in partnership with Massachusetts Adoption Resource Exchange. Information at 617-54-ADOPT. Cloudy today with a chance of rain, highs in the upper 30s. Tonight, rain possibly mixing with snow toward daybreak. Overnight lows in the lower 30s. Little or no snow accumulation. It's 32 degrees in Boston at 720.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, Charlie Pierce. But first...
There he is with the backdoor cut. I mean, I'll tell you what. I got one eye, Bill. I don't have two eyes like you, but I'm watching about 10 minutes here, and if that kid doesn't have stardom all over him, there's only one guy that's going to stop him from being a star, and his name is LeBron James.
LeBron James, the center of basketball's hurricane of hyperbole this winter, is an extraordinary player. He was so good as a junior at St. Vincent St. Mary's High School that the college recruiters gave up. they knew that he'd go straight from high school to the NBA. Yesterday, the Ohio High School Athletic Association ruled that James, having accepted two jerseys worth $845 from a clothing store owner in Cleveland, had violated the regulations that apply to amateurs and rendered himself ineligible to play in the remaining games of this season. There will, no doubt, be appeals. Derek Craig, the store manager who gave James the jerseys, said of his decision, "We get celebrities in here all the time. Sometimes you just got to give them some love." Craig is certainly correct in describing James, who only recently turned 18, as a celebrity rather than a high school student. As a consequence of the excellence of LeBron James, ESPN made one of his team's games available to a national television audience in December. That's a development controversial enough to have even some of those involved in the sports television industry crying mea culpa. Among them, former NBA star and TNT analyst Charles Barkley.
A 17, 18-year-old kid to be on national television, first of all, he can't make any money. So somebody's making a ton of money on him, but he hasn't accomplished anything yet. The only reason he's on is so they can exploit him out of money, and that's not right.
To capitalize on what seemed to be a very good thing, or at least a very profitable thing, St. Vincent St. Mary's put together something called the Scholastic Fantastic LeBron James Tour, which had the Ohio high school team playing games in Pittsburgh, Los Angeles, and Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Developments like this, according to Jack Roberts, executive director of the Michigan High School Athletic Association, were giant steps in the wrong direction, because they encourage overwhelming media attention.
Once in a while, something comes along where the media really does go overboard. And on this player, as great as LeBron James is, they have gone overboard. Not in reporting how great he is, but I think some are looking at, for example, the first televised game as a watershed moment in school sports. And it's when I heard people say that this is the defining moment in school sports and the wave of the future that I and the MHSAA, the Michigan High School Athletic Association, began to speak out, because it is not typical high school sports. It is not the defining moment. What is defining for most of the people who are involved in school sports is to be lucky enough to get in a game at the local level, at some level, ninth grade, JV, or varsity, or to score a bucket sometime.
I think Mr. Roberts is very wrong. I disagree with him on other issues.
That's Sonny Vaccaro, head of sports marketing for Adidas, one of the companies most active in using athletes to promote their products. For 40 years, Vaccaro has been showcasing the talents of teenaged basketball players in tournaments that he's organized, and steering those players toward college coaches or sneaker companies or both.
I believe that everything in our society points to advancing things that are in today's world. And I particularly think that basketball suffers more than any other sport because it's predominantly a black sport. And I think that's where some of the angst begins, to be honest with you.
What do you mean by suffers when you say that?
I think all the issues we're talking about, we're not talking about television high school football games, are we? We're talking about television high school basketball games. And, they've been televising football games for years. Mm-hmm. But when basketball becomes involved, then it's a national thing. We have outside the lines. We have the different types of media like yourself, saying, is it good or bad? Well, it certainly is good. Anything that's new and improvement and advances everything about playing sports is positive to me.
Sonny Vaccaro, who's made a handsome living as a combination youth basketball entrepreneur and guider of talent to places where it might bloom, works for the most part with high school-aged players. But the trend he's talking about, the improvement and advancement to which he refers, has found more and more people paying more and more attention to even younger players.
I've seen guys down to about fourth grade, but going into the fourth grade age group, I'm tipped off, hey, this is a guy you got to come see.
Clark Francis operates a website called Hoop Scoop Online. There, for a subscription fee, you can find out not only that LeBron James is the top-rated high school player in the country, but which youngsters might compete for that distinction 5 or 6 years from now, though Clark Francis acknowledges that his work is not an exact science.
So, you start ranking guys at fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade level, there's a lot of margin for error. And I, I think it is important, but I think it's a starting point. It's not an ending point. You know, if you're not on the list or you're somebody that you think is better than you are, is rated higher, we got 4 or 5, 6 years to get that right.
If that characterization of the process makes it sound like a game, that's because, in part, it is. But it's a game with serious consequences up the line. As the top-ranked high school player in the country and very likely a number one NBA draft pick, never mind the fact that he's currently ineligible to play, LeBron James' future is sure and prosperous enough so that earlier this winter, his mother could use that future as collateral to borrow the money to buy her son a Humvee. The same association which ruled James ineligible yesterday had days earlier okayed his acquisition of the car. There are currently over 400 LeBron James items on eBay, and his high school graduation, assuming he chooses to finish high school if he can't play basketball, is still 5 months off. That's only as it should be, according to Sonny Vaccaro, who sees LeBron James as merely the most recent youngster to make the right decision to leapfrog over college.
These are freaks. These are kids that God gave special attention to. I mean, Kobe Bryant, Tracy McGrady, and Kevin Garnett, and LeBron James, you know, they've been given special gifts. LeBron got caught in the perfect part of our time. The media is so big now. It's insatiable. You know, the Internet, ESPN 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, Fox 18, 19, 20, 21. I mean, there's a need to fill programming time. And LeBron hit the mother load. He went west in San Francisco Hills. He hit the gold mode. He did.
If Sonny Vaccaro is right, and there's no particular reason to think he won't be, nobody need feel bad that LeBron James is missing the college experience. But according to Len Elmore, a former NBA star who currently analyzes basketball for ESPN, there's every reason to feel sorry for the youngsters encouraged by the hype to regard themselves as the next LeBron James.
My biggest fear has to do with the other 99% of kids or more who look at LeBron James, see themselves or at least a part of themselves and say, you know what, I have that opportunity as well. And they forego developing skills and all the other things that are going to make them productive citizens way after the cheers are stopped, and essentially wind up kind of on a scrap heap with no skills, no marketable skills, no education, and just a bunch of articles in their scrapbook.
That's a worry shared by Jack Roberts. As executive director of the Michigan High School Athletic Association, he's proud of the Michigan regulation, which limits how far high school teams can travel for games. He worries that in states where the high school game has been floodlit, promoted, and sold, the soul of the game being played by children will be forgotten.
I think the harm is that we deflect resources from the many to the few, and from the low-profile sport to the high-profile sport. And the harm is that the coach in charge of that program gets bigger than the administration. The harm is that, and we've got a good example here, the harm is that our high school athletic program becomes like Division I college programs, at least in football and basketball, where there's a major disconnect between the educational mission of the institution and the entertainment athletic program that they're running. We can't go there in school sports. If we try to go there, we can't win because we don't have the resources to ever compete with the glitz and the glamour of those higher levels.
Actually, the danger may not be that high schools can't compete with the Division I colleges at presenting star-quality basketball. It may be that once lots of high schools have gone that route, with the help of national TV exposure, the search for talented prospects may begin even earlier and become more intense and invasive. Sonny Vaccaro would shrug and say that horse left the barn a while back. Jack Roberts unhappily acknowledges that may be the case.
Just as you say, there's a website for fifth graders and there's a mentoring program for eighth graders. It all seems a little bizarre to me and is an indicator of the decline I was talking about before, of the spiraling out of control that we in educational athletic administration may not be able to forever stop, but do have the responsibility to slow down as much as possible.
Jack Roberts and those who agree with him will be fighting the tide in that effort. The 25th annual Primetime Shootout, a high school tournament featuring 16 of the top 25 teams in the country, gets underway on Friday, and it will be televised. or at least that was the assumption when LeBron James was scheduled to play in the tournament. Will the show go on without its star? That the question needs to be asked indicates the stature James has assumed. Next week, we'll talk with high school senior Mike Jones, another premier player who began to draw serious attention when he was 13. Unlike LeBron James, Jones has opted to attend college, and we'll hear from Mike Jones's mother, who's not the least bit interested in the possibility of her son cashing in early and is only secondarily interested in how well he shoots, passes, and rebounds.
Without an education, the world is not going to stop for you. The world's going to continue on, and either you're going to be in the game of this game of life or you're going to be out of it.
Tune in to Only a Game next week for part two of our consideration of the tendency for younger and younger basketball players to come under more and more scrutiny earlier and earlier. Lots of big league baseball players must deal with the hardship of being sent down to the farm from time to time. But there's one pro pitcher who can count on that occurrence at least once every year for as long as he's in the game. Greg Eklund has our report.
A cold winter wind blows through the front porch of the house in which Tampa Bay Devil Rays pitcher Travis Phelps grew up. Except for a few cars that pass by on Highway 76, all is quiet these days around Rocky Comfort, Missouri. That's hardly unusual, considering that this town is so small there is no population number listed on its road sign. In fact, Rocky Comfort boasts only a restaurant, a garage, a school, and a post office. When Phelps graduated from high school in the neighboring town of Wheaton, he was among 37 seniors.
Phelps peers in, series of signs with a runner at second. In fact, a runner on every base. Fulmer at third, Molina at second, Kennedy at first. The pitch, swing and a miss, he got him. With a breaking ball to strike him out. Darren Erstad down on strikes for the second out of the inning. That is a huge out for Travis Phelps.
This isn't just another story about a small-town boy who fulfilled a dream of playing big league baseball. Phelps made baseball history when he was drafted by the Devil Rays in their inaugural draft 7 years ago in the 89th round, then became the lowest draft pick ever to make it to the majors.
Coming from Wheaton, Missouri, you know, and in a small place like that, you know, nobody ever believes that you can make it out of there and make it to do something, especially in professional sports. And so there was a lot of people that didn't believe that I'd make it. And that was fine. I mean, they've been telling me that my whole life, you know, that you're too small or you're not big enough, you're not fast enough, you're not strong enough, you know. And you know, when you're younger and you tell people what you want to do, you know, a lot of times they just laugh at you. So to do it, you know, it really gives a lot of inspiration, I think, to a lot of other people.
Phelps's performance in 2002 did serve as an inspiration to the locals in the two-county area. He made the D-Rays opening day roster, pitched in four games, then was sent to the minors before getting called back up to stay in June. On the year, Phelps appeared in 26 games, all in relief, with a 1-2 record and a 4.78 ERA. And during the offseason, Phelps also bought 90 acres of land near his grandfather's house in Wheaton. The sound of more than 20,000 chickens in one of four chicken houses on Phelps's farm is something the 25-year-old right-hander has grown accustomed to, but these days he wants no part of it. He studied cattle raising while playing ball at Crowder Junior College in nearby Neosho. After his freshman year at Crowder, Phelps was off to play summer ball in Illinois when his mother, Debbie, who still raises chickens, got a call at the farm from Devil Rays scout Fernando Arango one evening after the draft was completed.
I thought he told me the 89th round pick, but I didn't know that they drafted that far, that low. And so I thought, well, maybe I misunderstood. And so the guy that Travis was playing ball for, he called someone, and he thought he was 39th round. But as it later came out, I was correct. It was the 89th round pick.
Going through junior college and performing the way I did, I knew that I was better than the 89th round pick. Now, did I know that I'd make it to the majors? No. You know, you never know that, but it's always a dream.
1-0 pitch to the right-handed hitting catcher, in for a strike, 1-1. Phelps last worked on Friday night against the Yankees here, 12-9 loss to New York. An inning plus two batters, two runs, a hit, struck out three and walked one, following Jorge Sosa to the mound in that game.
Well, I always encouraged him. I never felt like he actually had the ability to make it to the major leagues because when he was in school, he was so small, you know, and everything. But once he was drafted and he decided that he was going to play professional ball, I never had doubt because he's just that way. If he puts his mind to something, it happens.
A few of Travis's baseball mementos are in the living room of his grandfather, Glenn Phelps, a couple miles up the road from the chicken farm. This is where, during the off-season, Travis practices his other trade, raising cattle.
Well, I think he got home the last of October or the first of November, and just as soon as he got home, we started working cows. I don't work them until he gets home. He does all the castrating and vaccinating, dehorns if we need to dehorn.
Is he getting good at it?
He's good at it. All I do is stand back and drive them anymore.
Word has it Travis Phelps rides a good cow horse, but I didn't witness it. He's in Florida now, practicing for spring training, hoping to spend his first full season with the D-Rays. For Only a Game, I'm Greg Eklund in Rocky Comfort, Missouri.
Here's the reason why I want to go back, I want to go back, I want to go back to the farm, far away from harm, with the milk pail on my arm. I miss the rooster, the one that used to wake me up at 4 a.m. I think your great big city's very pretty. Nevertheless, I want to be there. I want to see there a certain someone full of charm.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR in Boston, where Only a Game is produced, and from the other NPR member stations airing this program. Additional support comes from Thermo Electron, the scientific instruments company with a mission to advance drug discovery, improve manufacturing, and protect people and the environment, on the web at thermo.com. And from Nutter, McLennan, and Fish, working to solve critical legal issues on local, national, and international levels. Information at nutter.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by ThoughtForms, custom builders located in Acton celebrating 30 years of building new houses, renovations, and additions, ThoughtForms, and by Lexington Christian Academy, a co-educational preparatory school for grades 6 through 12 with a Christian world and life view, serving New England for more than 55 years, 781-862-7850. Good morning, I'm Dolores Handy. In sports headlines, the Celtics were dealt the worst loss in their history last night, losing to the Detroit Pistons 118-66. At one point, the Seas were down 60 points and it got downright ugly. The crowd cheered on the Celtics, turned on the Celtics, cheered nearly every Pistons basket for most of the final period. The Seas host Indiana tonight at the Fleet Center. The Bruins are off for the NHL All-Star break. Bruins captain Joe Thornton will be joined by teammate Glenn Murray in tomorrow's game. And a big sporting event in Boston today, the U.S. Indoor Track Meet takes place at the Reggie Lewis Athletic Center in Roxbury this evening. Meet Robert Siegel, sample some African cuisine, and learn more about our next Citizens of the World tour at a free reception Monday, February 10th. To reserve your space, call 800-909-9287. Cloudy today with a chance of rain, highs in the upper 30s. That rain could mix with snow tonight, little or no accumulation, lows in the lower 30s. It's 7:39.
Send her your love with a dozen roses.
But not just any roses. Send a dozen red roses from WBUR. When you contribute $120 to WBUR right now, we'll send the roses or a selection of lint truffles to your Valentine. Send them at WBUR.org or call 1-800-909-9287.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, the little old lady from Salt Lake City pumps iron. But first, analyst Charlie Pierce joins me for a discussion of the week's sports news. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Bill.
First of all, congratulations. You picked the Super Bowl.
As I told you before, the Super Bowl is good. The only thing I was unable to predict was the fact that Shania Twain has apparently joined KISS. Yeah.
Charlie, Thursday's report from the Commission on Opportunity in Athletics recommends that colleges trying to provide equal opportunities in athletics to both genders under Title IX should not have to count walk-ons and part-time students. Is this going to constitute a change with consequences?
Look, let us accept as a given that the Avignon presidency down there in Washington is not committed to civil rights legislation in its fullest enforcement in any way, shape, or form, all right? This was a kabuki commission set up to gut Title IX in favor of some people who weren't particularly fond of Title IX in the first place. Now, they've presented recommendations that have loopholes you can drive the Ohio State team football bus through, particularly the one on walk-ons. This particular, all unrecruited walk-ons will not count toward Title IX proportionality totals. Now, I don't know if anybody on this particular commission is familiar with the way college football and basketball operate, but coaches have been using the walk-on rule to evade and elude restrictions on the number of players they've had for 50 years. Now they're going to get to do it to evade federal law.
On Tuesday, Utah Jazz coach Jerry Sloan shoved a referee, and he will miss 7 games as a result. This led Utah center Greg Ostertag to conclude, quote, the league is falling apart. I wonder if that's a little overdramatic.
Well, I mean, the problem with Greg Ostertag is he wasn't talking about his coach who shoved the referee. He was talking about the referee who treated his coach with disrespect. You cannot have the purported alleged adult authority figures shoving the referees around. I would have suspended him for longer. He'd have lost a month if I was David Stern.
Ron Artest of the Indiana Pacers was also suspended. He was suspended for 4 games after his run-in with Pat Riley, also with Caron Butler, and with Miami fans. On Monday, his teammate Jermaine O'Neal said, quote, it's the Indiana Pacers against the world. Somehow this sounds familiar.
Well, my money's on the world. How do you feel about that?
This is standard motivational technique, though, right?
Oh, yeah,
everybody hates us, no one respects us.
Absolutely. The nice thing about this was that even though Reggie Miller called the people in the front office idiots and Jermaine O'Neal declared war on the world, Ron Artest was rather contrite and did admit at a press conference that there are anger issues he has to deal with. And good for him, because he really is a very admirable player in a lot of ways.
We learned this week that Orlando's Tracy McGrady and Allen Iverson of the 76ers had both offered to relinquish their starting spots in the All-Star game to Michael Jordan. Who says kids these days have no respect?
Well, that's some good. I mean, that is some good stuff. And even if they're only doing it at the behest of their agents and shoe companies, it's a nice moment. Michael's talking about it shows what kind of people they are, about the history of the game, about the guys who have paved the way. I would have done it for Dr. J. I'm not sure about that one, by the way. But it's certainly Iverson and McGrady get points for doing this.
Is there any truth to the rumor that Roman Hamrlich and Miroslav Shetan have also offered their spots in this weekend's NHL All-Star game to Michael Jordan, should he wish to strap on skates and show up for that one?
Look, the outside of the NFL Pro Bowl, there's no more meaningless All-Star game than the NHL one. But it does give us a chance to say my favorite name in all of hockey, Habib Olin.
There you go. Did the possibility that 3 University of Arizona basketball players rifled a vending machine and made off with 80 candy bars perhaps distract the nation's number one team just enough to allow Stanford to upset Arizona on Thursday night?
First of all, I didn't realize there were 80 candy bars in the machine. I'm going to have to go out shopping in them.
It's a good one.
This is college prank stuff. I mean the idea that 7-foot basketball players dressed in their Arizona warm-ups would go do this and expect to remain anonymous doesn't say a lot for study hall down there. But Arizona's been an up-and-down team all year. That was the best game I've seen a college team play in 2 years when they went into Lawrence and fell behind 13 at halftime against Kansas and came back and won by 17. I'm sure there'll be some community service. There'll be some apologies involved. I think Stanford just played a pretty good game. I don't think the distraction had anything to do with it.
The top 2 women's basketball teams in the country play each other tonight, Charlie. Does number 1 Duke end number 2 Connecticut's record winning streak?
Well, it's at Duke, and you think so, but Gino Auriemma and UConn have played so many of these games in the last 10 years, and I'm not entirely sure Duke knows what it's getting in for. I'll tell you, since I'm hot now, Bill, I'm going to take UConn on the road in this one.
For some tennis fans, Charlie, the big story of the Australian Open was the final in which Andre Agassi won a title. I gather that victory had consequences for his spouse well beyond increasing the household income.
Apparently Steffi Graf, who, as we know, is married to Andre, promised to play mixed doubles with him at the French Open in May if he won in Australia. And, of course, he's done it now. And apparently she's not real happy about this. I think this is great. I hope they do play. I hope Steffi takes it seriously and gets in shape so I could see her play tennis of any sort one more time.
Apparently, the reality TV craze and Don King have swept across the ocean because fading or faded pop stars have been whacking away at each other in Britain, just as Tanya Harding and Paula Jones have done on television right here.
Yeah, I mean, this confuses me. I mean, isn't the name for unlicensed mass fighting soccer?
Well, it confuses me, too, because I was under the perhaps naive impression that British television was good.
If this spreads to this side of the Atlantic, I want to arrange and promote the Tony Orlando versus Bob Novak match.
Finally, Charlie, last Saturday, fans of the Berwick Rangers pelted players on the opposing team with celery. Maybe soccer fans in Great Britain aren't such a violent lot after all.
Where did they get this? Was it celery day? I don't know. Where did they get the celery to throw? Except that a fan of the other team wrote to the Berwick fan site, "I drove 200 miles to watch the game only for some fat bearded git to bombard me with celery. Would he prefer rocks?
Or pumpkins?" Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine and lands haymakers here at Only a Game each week. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Bill.
Another kill. Ah, come on, Elvis. Really sing like the king.
Okay. Meat pie, sausage roll. Come on in, let's give us a go. Meat pie, sausage roll. Come on in, let's give us a go. Meat pie, sausage roll. Come on in, let's give us a go. Meat pie, sausage roll. Come on in, let's give us a go.
You can take a closer look at this week's stories, peruse our archives, or sign up for our newsletter by visiting our website at www.onlyagame.org. Janai Wu and Devona and Alan Doors wrote this week to express outrage that I had made light of an incident at a National Hockey League game during which Edmonton Oilers coach Craig McTavish had torn the tongue out of the mouth of a big fuzzy dog mascot that had been taunting McTavish's team. Folks, it was a mascot, a guy dressed up in a 6-foot-tall woolly suit with a long felt tongue. No dog was harmed in this incident. No dog was even involved. I'm sort of amazed that anybody would think that Only a Game would laugh at actual damage to an actual animal. From San Diego, Patrick Brussell, who hears the show on member station KPBS, wrote to say, "Thank you so much for the story on the two guys who've traveled to all the major sports arenas." Mr. Brussell went on to report that he had made the 30-stadium baseball tour in 1999, 17,471 miles in 70 days, all by car. Victoria Posner of Rochester, New York, was upset that we didn't mention the figure skating championships last week. She wrote, "I assume you think it is a sissy sport, and so I dare Bill to strap on skates and attempt a few quadruple jumps." All right, just let me tighten these up there. Hey, how was that? Among the many listeners who appreciated last week's show was Roman Vogel, who hears us on Vermont Public Radio. "Every year my Super Bowl highlight is to hear the haikus," he wrote, "and to hear Charlie Pierce declare the Super Bowl is good." Once again, OAG proves more entertaining than the overblown game. This was not the opinion shared by Barry Rosenberg, who emailed us from Budapest, Hungary, with a haiku of his own. "Lo, as some morons, in a religious fervor, you write bad haikus." A great many people wondered via email about the pirate music with which we celebrated the Super Bowl between the Buccaneers and the Raiders. The tune is called Scurvy, and the perpetrators are Captain Bog and Salty on a 1999 CD entitled, believe it or not, Bedtime Stories for Pirates. Yar, our ship sails under the website flag of onlyagame.org. Arr. Our official email address is onlyagame@wbur.bu.edu. The address nobody uses anymore is onlyagame, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215. You can leave a comment on the listener line by calling 1-800-353-1860.
We're the crew of the Pollywog, yo-ho, yo-ho. She fills her sails and takes us where she blows, yo-ho. On a windless day when the grog is spent, you can hear us sing our sad lament, yo-ho, yo-ho, yo-ho. We love to sing. Play the drum with a yardy yar and a rum pum pum. We love to sing and play the drum with a yardy yar and a rum pum pum. We love to sing and play the drum. We're the crew of the Pollywog, yo ho, yo ho. Had our fun, but now we have to go. Yo-ho, we're surely glad that you came along. You're a pirate now, so sing a song. Yo-ho, yo-ho, yo-ho. Yo-ho, yo-ho, yo-ho.
Imagine yourself as a weightlifter. Now imagine yourself deadlifting your own body weight plus 25% of said weight. For most, that would seem difficult, but it's not for one weightlifting novice, Beverly Amsler reports.
At first glance, Effie Nielsen of Salt Lake City looks like a typical grandmother, but the 105-pound, 90-year-old woman is a champion weightlifter. How did this great-grandmother of 12 decide to take up the sport at the age of 90? As Effie explains, it started just over a year ago, when some of her younger family members were horsing around doing push-ups after Thanksgiving dinner.
I said, I can do that. And they said, oh, Grandma, we don't want you to hurt yourself. And I got down and I did 10 push-ups for them, military style.
Word got around and one thing led to another. Before long, Effie, who had never been in a gym in her life, was being instructed by a trainer on how to lift correctly. And last September, after only 4 training sessions, she traveled to a weightlifting competition in Elko, Nevada, where she set 26 records. She was the oldest person there, including the audience. Though it was her first competition of any kind, Effie wasn't nervous.
Because I knew that I could do it. I knew I could lift it. I wasn't competing against anybody. I wasn't worried about doing anything more than I even knew I could do.
She squatted a total of 80 pounds, bench pressed 50, and deadlifted 135. That's 30 pounds more than her own body weight. Effie set a total of 26 state, national, and unofficial world records. More than once, she would set a record and shatter it on her next lift. She took several titles from teenagers in the 105-pound weight class and took the overall title from a woman who was a mere 69 years of age.
All right, here we go. At 90 years of age, our next guest recently broke 3 world records at this year's Nevada State Powerlifting and Bench Pressing Championships. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to Effie Nielsen. Effie, good to have you with us.
Since then, Effie has become something of a media darling. She was even featured in Sports Illustrated and was a guest on the David Letterman Show, where she challenged the host to some push-ups.
Well, when he asked me, I said, I will if you will. He said, well, I have to see about that.
Effie smiles as she remembers doing a modest 3 push-ups for him. David Letterman was too intimidated to do any, so he just kissed her hand and gave her a dozen roses. The life of competitive weightlifters revolves around the gym with carefully scheduled workouts. But Effie's been working out all her life. She grew up on a Utah sugar beet farm.
We went up and down these rows day after day until 20 acres were all thinned and then we would top them and weed them, and all summer long we was working in the beet field.
And Effie is still growing crops. In the summer, she tends a large fruit and vegetable garden behind her modest home.
I dry and can and freeze, and I live on that through the wintertime. And I till my own garden and and cut the lawns and do all the work like that that is necessary to keep the house going.
Effie concentrates her diet on homegrown foods and lots of water.
I take a calcium pill and I take a vitamin E because I see sometimes you need a little oil in the, in the machinery.
Instead of squats or deadlifts, Effie's daily workout regimen consists of trunk twists and stretches while watching Martha Stewart. But Tom Nielsen, Effie's grandson, says don't be surprised if you see her outside doing things like putting shingles on her own roof.
We're roofing, and she's carrying a 50-pound pack of shingles on her shoulders up the ladder. And I'm saying, Grandma, I don't want people to see you lifting this. I'm your grandson. That's my job. And she said, Tom, I can lift this. Now get out of my way. And she just goes and pops it down and starts handing me shingles as we shingle the roof.
Effie's story is an inspiration to young weightlifters such as 20-year-old Tana Coleman of Salt Lake City, who's training for her first competition.
I'm thinking, you know, if I can be that old and in the gym and still working out, like when I see older people working out here, it's motivating.
Effie says her accomplishments send a message to the young and the young at heart.
Well, I think sometimes it might inspire them to try harder or something.
This is Ms. Effie Nielsen attempting 135 pounds.
So what's next for Effie Nielsen? This champion weightlifter, who's also a poet, computer teacher, and world traveler, says she was much too busy with speaking engagements to compete in last weekend's national weightlifting competition in Texas. And when she finally gets some free time, she might relax by going on a fishing trip to Alaska. For Only a Game, I'm Beverly Amsler in Salt Lake City.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Gabe O'Connor. Our technical director is Michael Garth. We had help this week from Mary Stuckey at Minnesota Public Radio and from Keith Shields. Special thanks to the Tampa Bay Devil Rays Radio Network. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. To order a tape of Only a Game, call 1-800-909-9287, toll free. CDs and cassettes are $15 postpaid. That's 1-800-909-9287. If you'd like to hear this program again, sign up for our newsletter or take a virtual trip to Connecticut's basketball country, please visit our website, onlyagame.org. Our final word this week comes from basketball marketeer Sonny Vaccaro.
How many different weight rooms can you have, Bill?
Let me see. It's either 5, 12, or Joe Pepitone. That's the answer to all the trivia questions I know. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Major support for Only a Game comes from Bicon Dental Implants, offering discerning patients a same-day tooth replacement solution for failed root canal treated or missing teeth. Information is available online at Bicon.com or at 800-88-BICON.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is W...
Public Radio.
This is W...